From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. There are a lot of competing claims in the dispute over the land in southeastern Utah called the Bear's Ears. Everyone seems to agree the land needs some kind of legal protection. The question is just how much. We'll be talking about the particulars in this dispute today. Among them, the question of what Native Americans in the region want. Utah Congressman Rob Bishop told the Salt Lake Tribune recently you'd have to drive 5 hours from the area to find one Native American who supports designating it a national monument. But a coalition from area tribes says it found hundreds who support the monument idea. So today in the program, we'll talk about the Bear's Ears, the cultural part of the story. There is an environmental part, not to mention politics and economics. So join us after the news. Hi, it's Doug Fabrizio with a call out to you filmmakers out there or those who've always wanted to make a film. On June 15th, we're hosting a screening, what we're calling an open screen night, and it's your chance to make a short documentary. Here are the rules. It can't be more than 6 minutes. It has to be real. It's a documentary. And that's kind of it. But here's the theme. The body is a temple. The body is a temple. There's $500 in it if you win. You can get the details at videowest.org. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. So you've probably been hearing about the disputed land in southeastern Utah called Bear's Ears. The ears part are these 9,000-foot twin buttes that rise up out of Elk Ridge. It's a spectacular area that includes the Cedar Mesa and the Abajo Mountains and the Combe Ridge, White Canyon. What may be unique about this particular land dispute is the importance of the territory for Native Americans in the region and their involvement in the discussion, or at least their complaints that they haven't been involved in the discussion. These groups are also, though we should say, divided about how best to protect this land. Should President Obama designate it as a national monument? Or would it be better to get more local involvement, the say of various local tribal groups and the people whose ancestors settled that land? So today in the program, we're talking about the Bear's Ears dispute. We invite you to join us if you have questions or comments. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. To give us some perspective and lay all this out for us is Brian Maffley. He's joining us first. He covers Utah's public lands for the Salt Lake Tribune. He's written numerous stories on this debate and joining us here in the studio. Brian, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks, Doug. It's good to be back here again.
So would you give it – I wanted to maybe start historically because this is something you've written about. In one of your articles you wrote about, you say tragedy and betrayal populate the history of the Navajo people. That's just one group involved in this dispute.
Yeah.
But is that sort of an undercurrent in all of this?
I think so. Many tribes believe, have an ancestral connection to the Bear's Ears region. It's not large. There's not many people who live there now, but the remnants of these civilizations are everywhere. 100,000 archaeological sites on top of Cedar Mesa, by some estimates, in the form of cliff dwellings, grave sites, longhouses, you name it. And these are sites that are imperiled to a degree. They've been looted for years and still are. So the people we call the Anasazi lived there 1,000 years ago. There were definitely habitations before that. And many of the Puebloan tribes are descendants of those groups. They are now scattered around the Four Corners region in a variety of tribal groups. The Zuni and the Hopi are two of the biggest groups, and they're part of the coalition of tribes, pushing for the Bear's Ears National Monument.
So back up, when did this coalition first propose the idea? This goes back a few years now.
Yeah. There's two key groups here. The group that developed the proposal is called Utah Dene Bekea. Their chairman will be one of your guests today. They started developing this idea probably 6 years ago, 2010, thereabouts. And it wasn't necessarily for a national monument. In fact, I think they were more interested in a national conservation area that would be designated by Congress. And everybody kind of agrees that, this is a special region. It deserves protection. It's a matter of who gets to decide. That's what this debate really is. Who gets to decide? So Utah Dene Bekea, a group based primarily of Navajo and Ute tribal members who I think all of them live in Utah on these boards. There might be a few that live in Colorado or Arizona. They spend a lot of time connecting with people, asked to find out what kind of things they would like to see in a national conservation area / national monument, what lands would be worth protecting, and what kind of activities would be allowed there. And so they, over the course of a few years, they came up with this proposal for 1.9 million acres, like you said, from, you know, basically from the Abajo Mountains south to the San Juan River, basically the border with the Navajo Reservation to the south, and White Canyon, Glen Canyon to the west, and then the communities of Blanding, Bluff, Monticello on the east side. It's a vast area. It's truly a landscape level kind of idea. One of the things they wanted to do was ensure traditional uses of these lands for firewood gathering. It's one of the few places where firewood is still plentiful.
Yeah. But this seems like where you get the crux of the issue, because on one hand you and I'm wondering if, and we'll get to sort of the tribal discussion, because there's a dispute among these different groups about all of this, but so tribal groups, and I wonder if this is part of why they may not have thought early on about it being a monument, because they want to use that land. I mean, when you set aside land as a national monument, traditional uses like gathering firewood and gathering pine nuts and those kinds of things, that wouldn't be included.
They kind of get limited.
Yeah.
Well, you know, with national monuments designated under the Antiquities Act that are not part of the National Park Service system, there's a lot of flexibility.
And there is.
You see that in the Grand Staircase designated 20 years ago. And what, you know, the guidance for managing those lands is determined by the proclamation that the president writes and signs as part of this. And there is a lot of latitude there for allowing
traditional uses.
Yeah. Mm. So, for example, grazing was grandfathered into the Grand Staircase, and grazing is still practiced there, widespread. Yeah. The critics say it's being pushed out. I think that's a matter of debate. The same thing would happen probably for a bear's ears. There's a lot of grazing there that would still happen. And the tribal groups who are proposing this would certainly like to have access for their traditional activities of gathering the natural resources that go along with their cultural identities.
But if you took that out, then or included that, if the president were to, you know, the president's people were to be able to draft a monument designation that said you can still go in there and do all of that, why would Native people be opposed to it?
I don't understand that, because the critics of the Navajo who live in Utah who oppose the monument, they all say we don't want to be pushed off of our land.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, the proponents of the monument are saying, no, we are protecting our access to the land through this proposal of ours. We want to have the right to co-manage these lands with the federal government. That is part of their proposal, is this kind of idea for a co-management.
Is that realistic? Has that ever happened?
Yeah. No, I think this would be a first. Like, I understand this to be the first national monument proposed by Native American tribes. So Representative Rob Bishop has gone on record saying that's not realistic. That can't happen.
It goes against the very nature of the monument, is what he said.
It's, the monument
more
is
restrictive than that, he says.
They believe, you know, Rob Bishop is a huge critic of the Antiquities Act and is actively interested in repealing it or gutting it to some extent. And he sees a national monument as kind of a top-down federal government telling the locals what they can and can't do on land that's in their own backyard. And that's kind of, you know, offensive to a lot of people in San Juan County. And it was deeply offensive to people in Kane and Garfield counties when the Grand Staircase was designated. And
in 96. I want to say something about that, because I'm wondering if that's a specter that's hanging over all
Absolutely,
of this.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, locals were, as you say, deeply offended. Members of the congressional delegation.
Yeah.
a Democrat included, Bill Orton at the time.
Yeah, lost his seat.
Lost his seat as a result of it. Governor Mike Leavitt, who was governor at the time, was not informed until sort of the last minute. So I'm wondering if the Obama administration in some way is trying to avoid what happened with Grand Staircase.
I think so, because they're giving Utah a lot of opportunities here to come up with another plan. And that is being developed through Rob Bishop's Public Lands Initiative, and which has its own Bears Ears conservation proposal, which has many elements that are not acceptable at all to the Utah Dene Bekea folks.
I want to get into those particulars, by the way. Maybe now would be the time. I mean, let's talk about this, because it's being referred to by opponents of this bill, Congressman Chaffetz and Congressman Bishop's bill that they've drafted, as a poison pill. Because under the bill, as I understand it, and one of the particular things is the title to thousands of disputed roads would be passed along to the state. It would prohibit future Antiquities Act designation. It would strip away impediments to oil and gas development across millions of acres. Is that fair to say?
It does strip away some impediments, but I don't think in the Bears Ears region.
Okay. But who cares? Yeah. I mean, if they get that.
Yeah.
And so the question is, why would the Obama administration or environmental, like, where is the in that compromise to environmental groups or the administration?
That's their big complaint. They're throwing nothing to the environmental community with the Public Lands Initiative bill, and that's why they've come out so strongly opposed to it. And another one of the poison pills is that where they have wilderness designations, they've locked in grazing at a current level, which isn't even allowed on regular BLM lands that doesn't have conservation status. This type of wilderness proposed by Representative Bishop would allow for chainsaws, other mechanical devices inside the wilderness area. Well, that goes against what we've traditionally thought of as wilderness, and the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, their number one criticism with that is, wow, you've just created a new watered down standard for wilderness protection, and that's not acceptable for the pro wilderness crowd. They're just never going to go along with that.
But the other side of that might be that it's a compromise. It's wilderness designation that's not as extreme.
Yeah,
And at least you're protecting some. I mean, the bill does designate some 225,000 acres of wilderness on Cedar Mesa, I think it is.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So there's some attempts anyway at environmental protections. So I guess what proponents of this bill might say is, you're not going to get everything you want, but take something.
Yeah. Well, I think the critics of the public lands bill would say, well, the status quo is better than what's in that bill. Why would we go for it? There's lots of land, BLM land within that proposed monument that is wilderness study area and roadless areas on the national forest part of it. These lands are managed as wilderness now, and so their feeling is, well, much of that land should be go ahead and designate it as wilderness as part of a proposal. And the Utah Dene Bekea proposal does envision wilderness designation, although they don't use that word. They use a Navajo term, which I can't pronounce. I need to learn it. But it roughly translates into places that are to be left alone.
Right.
Yeah.
What do you think you understand at this point, having covered this for the past several years now, about Native opposition? What do you understand about who's opposed and who isn't? That's a huge part of the story.
That's a tough question, to get into. And I think we're seeing some divisions within the Navajo community that may be personal. There seems to be some personal antagonisms between County Commission Commissioner named Rebecca Benally, who's anti-monument. And
she's a member of the Navajo Nation.
She's a member of the Navajo
Probably
Nation.
One of the most outspoken.
She is the most outspoken critic of a monument in San Juan County.
Right.
On the one hand, and then on the other hand, we have the Mary Boy brothers, who are pro monument, also both former county commissioners, and they're accusing each other of distorting each other's position. I mean, Rebecca Benally went so far as to accuse monument supporters of actually looting sites, which is I find to be strange. I mean, why would someone who wants to protect an area be actively vandalizing it? So that's what makes me wonder if some of this is personal rather than substantive.
You quote Marie Holliday of the Navajo, one Navajo community in particular, who's worried that they'll have to travel a lot further to get this firewood and these pine nuts.
Well, that's exactly because the Cedar Mesa area is a place that's nearby these Navajo communities where you can freely gather wood, and which has a special significance, and pine nuts and other things as well. The problem with that is the monument proposal, the whole idea of it is to ensure access to those resources for tribal people. So the feeling is Marie Holliday is kind of distorting what the monument proposals actually says. But the fact is, once the monument's designated, well, we're putting our faith in the federal government to come up with a management plan.
And they would have reason not to trust the federal government, given the history.
That's the history of that tragedy and betrayal I've talked about. There's a pretty bad record of broken promises between the Navajo and the federal government.
So you can see how they'd be gun-shy.
Yeah.
There's the idea of some direct accusations that environmental groups are somehow buying off Native tribal leaders and members to support this kind of thing. What do you make of that story?
Well, again,
you haven't been able to confirm anything like that.
No. Well, it's true that members of Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance are very supportive of the Bears Ears idea. They are probably even donating their own money to the cause. Are they telling them what to do? Are they, are members of the Utah Dene Bekea board or the Intertribal Coalition's board enriching themselves off of this? I don't see any evidence of that at all. Members of the Utah legislature are asking the governor's office, asking the attorney general to investigate Utah Dene Bekea's alleged ties to Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance and other, quote unquote, outside groups.
Yeah. Have you got a straight answer from the attorney general's office about whether an investigation is going on?
Sean Reyes's office doesn't generally comment on things like that. So I've asked them, and they said they won't discuss it.
You've also written about this letter that's been circulating around San Juan County that claims these pro-monument tribal leaders have been paid off by groups.
Yeah.
What's the story?
Paul Raleigh has too.
Yeah. What's the story of that letter?
Well, one of the letters, I think the most disturbing was one that was attributed to a Utah Dene Bekea board member named Albert Holliday, who is a elected chapter house representative. I think it's Old Jata chapter. So there is a letter attributed to him, posted around Bluff, alleging that, like you said, leaders of these groups have been bought off by the environmental groups. A monument would close off Cedar Mesa to access for gathering for all sorts of things. And it was pretty pernicious. I mean, Albert Holliday, Albert Holliday was a defector. And there's nothing could be further from the truth. And I have to wonder, why would the opponents of the monument resort to that kind of tactic? It seems to be discrediting the anti-monument position when these kind of dirty tricks are being resorted to.
Yeah.
Do you have a sense, what are you hearing from locals? We'll hear from Representative David Hinkins here in a moment, but what are they saying about the impact, a potential impact of a monument designation on that region?
Yeah, well, Rebecca Benally has called it, said it would be devastating.
Yeah.
That was her word. And for proof of that, they point to what happened in Garfield and Kane County after the Grand Staircase designation. Well, the evidence from that's kind of mixed. It seems that there's been plenty of economic development in Garfield and Kane counties after that designation. No, there isn't a coal mine on the Kaparowitz Plateau. That didn't happen. It might not have happened anyway, regardless of the monument. There seems to be disappearing school children in Escalante. However, there seems to be a lot of economic prosperity going on for people who have come into towns like Kanab, Escalante, Boulder, and are capitalizing on the ability for this landscape to draw tourists, especially tourists from Europe who are interested in seeing these incredible canyons and go on Jeep tours. And so Main Street and Escalante is lined with businesses that cater to those kind of people.
Right.
And also a new clinic, a hardware store. And yet the Garfield County Commission has claimed that their county, that the monument is driving their county out of business practically. And, I think there are, the natural resource-based extractive industries, yeah, they are suffering. There's no question. But is that because of the monument? It's hard to know that. Clearly, logging has disappeared from Garfield County in these 20 years. It's hard to blame that on the monument, though. There's other issues going on that would have reduced the amount of wood available for logging. Grazing seems to be going on at the levels it had in the past, but subject to fluctuations because of drought. Perhaps some ranchers are getting out of the business. There's been a lot of consolidation in that industry. So you have, a family would have one or two allotments, a lot of families are getting out. And so now there's a few families that control a great deal of allotments. So there's this perception that grazing is becoming less important to those communities. So will that transfer over, to a bear's ears? That's a hard thing to say. I imagine there'll still be plenty of grazing, but no, there will not be oil and gas drilling on Cedar Mesa if there's a monument. That will never happen.
So what happens if Representative Bishop is able to finalize his bill and get it passed? What happens to President Obama's options?
Yeah, we're kind of running out of daylight here because the impetus for the public lands bill was to get some alternatives passed by Congress before President Obama leaves office, which is in January.
Yeah.
He has been on a monument designating spree the last couple of years. Most recently, Mojave Trails in California, about 1.5 million acres in the desert in Southern California. He has designated pretty big monuments in almost all the surrounding states to Utah. So we see, the Rio Grande del Norte in New Mexico, Browns Canyon in California, Basin and Range in Nevada. That was about 700,000 acres. That one was particularly controversial and relevant to the Utah story because that occurred in a county, Lincoln County, where they had completed a few years before a public lands bill for those counties that resulted in mountaintop wilderness designations. So Bishop felt it was, and Jason Chaffetz felt it was really wrong for the president then to come in and designate a huge national monument.
After they'd done all that work and all that.
Yeah. Yeah. But this kind of speaks to this idea that Sally Jewell's been talking about in some of her recent speeches.
This is the Interior Secretary, by the way.
Yeah, yes, Interior Secretary Jewell. And very high-profile speeches she's been giving recently while announcing, hey, I'm going to visit Utah this summer, this idea that conservation needs to recognize landscapes, not just little bits and pieces of stuff.
Whole bits. Whole parts.
Yeah, and that fits the bill for the bears here. So that, from the top of the Abajo Peaks to the San Juan River.
You know, is the Obama administration in effect saying to Congressman Bishop and Congressman Chaffetz, all right, draft a bill, but you've got to compromise. There's got to be in some way acceptable to the administration and to environmental groups and to tribal groups, by the way, who've backed out of the process.
They said they weren't
being involved. They backed out in January.
That's right. Yeah. So there, let's talk about one of these groups. The Bears Ears Intertribal Coalition is a group comprised of five of the key tribes involved. They formed last year to take the Bears Ears National Monument proposal and put it before Secretary Jewell. They felt that they were getting no traction in the public lands process because they were outside of Utah. They're from the Navajo tribes based primarily in Arizona, the Zuni, same with the Hopi, the Zuni are in New Mexico. But the Utes are here in Utah. So it wasn't completely outside of Utah, but they felt that they had zero voice, zero say in how that was going. They pulled out. And I think they would have been perfectly happy with the National Conservation Area had it reflected the measures and protections that were in the bill that the proposal that Utah Dene Bakaya laid out.
We're out of time, essentially, but let me just ask you this. So what are you is the president going to wait for this bill to do some compromising, or is the president just going to make the designation? Do you have a sense at this point?
Well, the bill hasn't been introduced yet. A draft came out 5 months ago. Yeah. It should be a final version should be out any minute, but Congress is about to recess in July. So I think
– And Secretary Jewell says she's coming here in the summer, and people are expecting – a designation at that point?
Yeah, mid-July we expect Sally Jewell to visit Utah, and I think a lot of people are thinking that's when an announcement of some sort will be made.
The governor and Representative Bishop are saying she should come out and look at the place, have a conversation, not make a designation. Yeah. What would you expect? She's going to just make the designation in the summer, regardless of what's going on?
Well, it's a president's call, but maybe she'll say just to put them on notice that we've got a few short months left to get a proposal. Maybe they need to cut it out of the Public Lands Initiative and do a standalone bill. But you know how lethargic Congress can be.
Brian Maffley, reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune, covering Utah's public lands. He's been covering this issue. Brian, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Representative David Hinkins will join us when we get back from a break. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we've been talking about the debate over some 2 million acres of land in southeastern Utah known as Bear's Ears. Coalition of Native American tribes has asked the Obama administration to use the Antiquities Act to protect 1.9 million acres of the region. There are thousands of archaeological sites on the land. It's considered sacred to some Native peoples. But a number of state leaders and members of Congress say the land needs some kind of protection. They just don't like the idea of designating it as a national monument. David Hinkins is among that group. He represents Utah's 27th district in the state Senate. His district includes nearly all of the land at issue here in the Bears Ears debate. He opposes the designation of a national monument, supports the public lands initiative proposed by Governor Rob Bishop and Jason Chaffetz. And we should also mention that Senator Hinkins is a chair of the Utah Legislature's Commission for the Stewardship of Public Lands, and he's joining us by phone from his office in Orangeville, Utah. And Senator, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
I wanted to begin. Can I ask a little bit about, let's go back to the Grand Staircase Monument designation in 1996. Mm-hmm. Neither the governor, the congressional delegation, local leaders heard anything about all of that. Are you worried something like that's going to happen?
Well, we've heard about this one, so that's probably not going to be the issue this time. I mean, we've heard about this for a while now that it's been coming. The Public Land Initiative is one that basically started the ball rolling on setting this aside as a protected area, of course. And so, it's not going to be a surprise like it was last time, that's for sure.
What are you expecting when Secretary Jewell comes in the summer here? Do you think she's here to just gather information, or do you worry she's here to make the announcement?
Oh, I would hope to be that it would be to gather information personally. I mean, I don't think that they'd make an announcement yet. I always kind of wonder how they overlook their own policies. Of they do NEPA studies every time anybody makes a change to the use of the lands and stuff like that, but yet they can go in there and do a 1.5 million acres change of the use of land without following their own directions, which is the NEPA, which includes a lot of that part of the NEPA process is what's the environmental impact as well as the economical impact to that area. And that was never done on the Grand Staircase or any of the other monuments that's been designated. And I don't understand how a government can set policy and then not go by their own policy. That's the big issue that I have with this.
It's a lot of question about what has been the impact of the Grand Staircase National Monument on local economies. Some say, hey, the tourist industry is booming. The extractive industries may be hurting somewhat, but all in all, it's a wash. What do you say about the impact?
Well, I guess it's a wash. I mean, a lot of the tourism industries or like the hotels and stuff are owned by maybe the Marriott family or the Holiday Inn, you know, whoever owns that. So, you know, the hotels may do well, but I don't think that really helps a lot of the local people other than the ones that change the sheets and cooks the hamburgers, and that's usually minimum wage jobs.
What do you understand, Senator, about opposition of Native groups? Some say it's being overstated. Some say that. What's your sense of it? And this contention that Native groups, Native leaders in particular, are being bought off by environmental groups and others who support the designation.
You know, I have no evidence of them being bought off or anything like that, but I do know that some of them that I've been talked to, some of the elderly people that I know down there, they actually wonder when they'll be able to move up there. In other words, they believe that this is an extension of the reservation. And so a lot of them are, some of them are basically in favor of it because they think it's going to be an extension of the reservation. And so they want to know when they'll be able to move their families up there, run their sheep and their cattle up there. And so I think that's kind of a misconception by some of the Native Americans.
What would happen, do you think, if the president were to designate this a national monument, could, in terms of the impact on, let's just talk about tribal groups for a moment here.
Mm-hmm.
How restrictive could this be? Congressman Bishop has said this idea of gathering and hunting is in direct conflict of the, as he put it, the very nature of the monument.
Mm-hmm.
Others are saying, no, the president can make an exception, can make this land accessible to tribal groups for cultural practices and those kinds of things. What do you think about all of that?
Well, I'm sure he could, but as history has shown us so far, that hasn't happened. They mentioned not being able to use chainsaws. Well, most people, if they go gather firewood, knows that it's pretty virtually impossible without a chainsaw. I mean, to take an axe up there and chop wood, you know, to cut trees down, the dead trees and stuff like that, I think that's kind of not a lot of people's going to gather wood without chainsaws, gas-fired chainsaws, which, you know, and I just don't understand that part of it.
What about this idea that that tribal members are hoping to co-manage the land? Doesn't seem to be any precedent for that. What do you think about that idea?
I believe that would probably be, like you said, it may happen, but the reason it probably did happen is because the PLI basically had included in theirs where they would have like two Native Americans on the board that would be a regional board of advisors, and I think that's where Bears Ear Coalition has came up with the idea that that might happen, and it probably would if they go by Congressman Bishop's and Congressman Chaffetz's idea. They're the ones that came up with the idea that it should be managed locally, and they're the ones that came up with the idea that this should be done by the local people down there and the residents of the things that's going to be impacted by it, as well as and that included all the environmental communities, the ranchers, the people that's going to be grazing, some of the mining, some of the oil and gas exploration groups and stuff like that, that actually brings in a lot of revenue. Even for the reservation itself right now, Resolute Oil are the ones that brings in most of the revenue for the tribal leaders in not just only Utah but also Arizona.
Are you for the most part supportive of this PLI draft bill? In fact, some 18 million acres, it would create 41 new wilderness areas, 14 national conservation areas are designated. Is that too much? Or are you comfortable with that?
Me personally, I'm not in favor of any of it.
Yeah.
But I represent the people that I represent who elected me, San Juan County, the Carbon County, Emery County, Grand County. Those are the people that should be the ones that's making the decision, and they're the ones that decided to go with the PLI. I've not been involved in that part of it as a state. I'm for total transfer of the public lands to the state of Utah,
right,
like the other states had. That's me personally. But the people I represent, they would like to have some input on it. The people that live in San Juan County would like to have some input. The local commissioners, the local city mayors, and the people that's going to be very impacted by it, they are in favor of it. And so I am in favor of it.
So your resolution is to forget this bill, forget designating land, forget trying to compromise that. You're saying, let's do what we've been talking about for a long time now, transfer public land to state control.
Yes, that's me personally. But that's not what my constituents possibly want. And
yeah,
that's why they participated in the Public Lands Initiative. And so it's a grassroots, that's what they want. And it's also the tribal. I represent the seven chapters in the Utah Navajo Reservation. And they had meetings. I went to two of them myself, so I know that the meetings were there. All the tribal leaders were invited. Most of them all showed up. And so they all had input if they wanted to put input into it.
Hmm. I should mention, and I wonder what you think about the part of the bill that would give some of these disputed road routes back to the state, that would cede title to these roads.
Yeah, the RS-2477, basically, them roads have been there historically forever, you know, since the pioneers got there. The wagon roads, they started out as wagon roads. They ended up being roads for grazers to go out and manage their streams, the ponds that they've been able to build to have their livestock, which has benefited their livestock, as well as the wildlife of that area. I mean, some of the best hunting in the state of Utah is on the Elk Ridge Mountains that we're talking about. I personally hunted down there in 1978 and was able to archery hunt and take a very nice deer. And a lot of that's attributed to the cattlemen and stuff that was able to have the resources, you know, to have ponds and stuff up there to have the animals on the mountains and out in those flats and stuff where they've developed water resources. And when you have, when you turn that into wilderness areas, and you turn that into whatever they call them, parks, or they no longer can do that. You know, they can no longer take mechanical equipment into to clean their ponds, to clean, you know, to maintain it. So eventually, the wildlife will leave as well as the cattlemen will leave.
Senator, do you have a sense of what's going to happen? You've got these competing ideas. You've got the idea from the Obama administration, or at least the proposal to designate it. You have a bill on the other side, none of which you want, but what do you expect is going to happen in the end?
Here's what I think should happen. If they want to designate it, which the president has that right to do it, they should say, okay, we're going to designate this. Okay, then all of a sudden it goes into the NEPA study that, okay, we're going to go out there and we're going to have our federal officials, the Forest Service, the BLM, or whatever land it's on, and go through and do the NEPA study, and it'll take 5 to 10 years, just like it does with somebody that wants to go out and develop an oil field or a gas field or to timber or to graze. They do this NEPA study. And so they'll go out there and do a study. And then after 5 years or 10 years or however long the NEPA takes, and they say, okay, it looks like it's feasible. It's not going to be a big impact to the environment one way or the other. It's going to be this and that. And then they should come to the Congress, and Congress should give it the blessing. It should be an act of Congress that says, especially when we're designating so much area. I mean, that's a third of the county.
So you're saying what you're opposed to is
the largest county in Utah.
Yeah, so you're opposed to the president just unilaterally making an executive decision that affects so many people.
Exactly. It should have to go through their process that they've set up to do the NEPA analysis of this change of the land, use of the land, and then it should be a congressional approval. And they could look at it and say, yeah, here's the NEPA study that's been done on it. Is it a yes or a no? Congress should pass it, just like that's the way our forefathers designed it to be.
Hmm.
And when we first started this congressional designations was like 5 to 50 acres or something like that for a monument to actually, you know, to put something up to say that somebody done something here. But for 2 million acres is ridiculous.
That's State Senator David Hankins. He represents District 27, which includes all of the land at issue in the Bears Ears debate. He spoke to us today from his office in Orangeville, Utah. Senator, thanks very much for taking the time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We'll take a break and be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we are talking about this dispute, this debate over the Bears Ears region. A coalition of Native American groups have been asking the Obama administration to use the Antiquities Act to protect 1.9 million acres of this region. People are in support of it. Some are opposed to it. We've been sort of hearing both of those sides today. Joining us now in the program is William Gray Eyes, who is the chairman of the Utah B'nai B'kaya. It's a grassroots group of Navajo Ute tribe members that originally proposed the idea. He's speaking to us from his home on the Navajo Mountain in San Juan County. And William Gray Eyes, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Yes, good morning. And those that are listening to the radio, appreciate it. Thank you for providing me some time to express or explain some of the information from the perspective of the Navajo representative. Thank you.
Let me ask you first, Chairman, the importance of this land to the Navajo and to the others, the other Native groups involved. Would you explain that?
Yes. As we have indicated during the what had mobilized this concept was the Senator Robert Bennett introduced the concept of PLI or land planting, really what it was. Later on, when he lost his re-election, Congressman Bishop picked up the concept and initialed it. PLI, Public Land Initiative. So, in that sense, we were hoping to get in on this discussion and let our voices be heard through this process of what was identified as a local plans and proposal to be developed. Nonetheless, it was never considered. Our proposal was never considered as to be part of the public PLI at the beginning, and that's still the case to this day. So the main purpose of our interest is that we have an Aboriginal ancestral land interest to this area. We have come to conclude that this area in question in San Juan County of 1.9 million acres have significant cultural impact for the Native American, not only the Navajos, but also other Indian tribes throughout the Southwest. So
are
right
you
now, there,
forgive me,
are 25 tribes that have the interest in it. Yes.
Sorry for butting in there, Chairman. Let me ask you: are you sure? Do you feel confident that that a national monument designation, though, is the right way to go? Because there's some concern, as you know, among other tribal members, that this designation could, in fact, cut off access to some of the cultural facets that are important: firewood gathering, pine nut gathering, other aspects. Are you sure the national monument designation is the way to go?
Certainly, I can use some reference federal legislation that has been passed. 1978, Native American Freedom of Religion Act opens the door to all national monuments across the country for Native Americans to have freedom of access to areas. So that's what they don't understand, the state legislator, the federal legislator. And a lot of people, Native Americans, they are opposing us, a few in numbers, using this tactic to derail our proposal.
I wanted to ask you about the contention that's being made that some tribal leaders have been quote unquote bought off by environmental groups, that they're taking money or at least being indirectly exploited by environmental groups to support this designation. What's your response to that, Mr. Chairman?
Is there such thing? I have no idea who's being paid. According to our records, there's an organization, has never occurred in my knowledge, to my knowledge, that these things are happening. Somebody being bought to really oppose or be in favor of the concept, I have no idea. Maybe the other parties are the ones that are being opposed. The project, they may as well have been favorably received. Some, I don't know. I have no idea.
Those who
environmental buying out the tribe. Of course, the Native American has been environmentalists all truly as a grassroots. So they leave things as they are.
I wanted to get your sense of what it is. And you've talked to others within these tribal groups that are opposed. What's the nature of their concern? What are they worried about? Those that you've talked to who are in fact worried among the tribal groups.
They don't have a proposal. They have nothing to justify their position. We have a proposal. We put a proposal, a cultural mapping assessment that was done. That's our basis for it. They don't have an assessment. They don't have a plan or a proposal.
What about this idea that one of your proposals is that you work with the federal government to co-manage this land? Can you give me a sense of what that would look? It's kind of unprecedented. It's not something that I can say I've heard of before. The co-management of land between tribal groups and the federal government. How would that work? Do you have something in mind in particular?
Yes. It's been the practice of the federal and the state and the county government. As Senator Hicken expressed, that the PLI has been amended to give Native American an advisory position. Advisory, what does that mean? That's either or consultation. It doesn't work. We'd rather be at the table. Equality, that's what we're looking at. Rather than being advised to give advice or be consulted means nothing more than to listen to, but never implement your ideas into their plan. That's what it means.
Yeah. Are you sure you trust the federal government? I mean, you'd have a reason not to, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I trust the federal government since I still have some piece of land here that I can use. But the state is the one that's really opposing the Native American. And I'm sure the county is also in that same position. There was an article that was done when Senator Hatch visit, and by and large, we have assessment done, and the Native American population of San Juan County is 52%. Their article indicated only 46%. So there is always and continuously a difference in either in data or in the position to support or not to support. But we are in a position to support this concept of national monument as we stand here today on, as I stand here today on the Navajo Reservation.
Final question, Mr. Chairman. We don't have a lot of time left, but so there's two conflicting proposals. There's the designation of the monument, which you want. There's the Public Lands Initiative bill, which you don't want. You say you haven't been involved. What do you think is going to happen? Is it going to be one or the other? What are you expecting this summer to happen?
The congressional legislation, I don't see that. It's not going to happen. Not because we say so, because of the behavior and attitude of Congress people. Hmm. It will take maybe another decade to do it, possibly, if it ever happened. But since we are in a position to do certain things as a government-to-government relation with the Native American to the federal president, United States president, that's what we will use.
It's Willie Gray Eyes. He's the chairman of Utah Dene Bekea. It's a group of tribal groups that proposed the Bears Ears National Monument. He joined us today from his home on Navajo Mountain in San Juan County. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for taking the time.
I appreciate that, and thank you very much for listening. Thank you.
Thank
Bye.
You. Radio West is a production of KUER News, the show produced by Elaine Clark and Benjamin Bombard. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Thank you.